Spring, a time of boundless promise. The winds of change fill the air as hope blossoms boldly on the branch. And NASCAR rumbles into town. Catch the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, the Red Eye 250, and the Active Pest Control 200 at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Be here March 4th and 5th for the promise of a new season. Sunday tickets start at just $44, and all kids tickets are just $10. Visit amsracetix.com.
This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Blessed trails.
Welcome to Blessed Trails. I am Belinda Gale, and I am so delighted to be your host as we visit with interesting and diverse guests. We also have the honor of featuring gospel, inspirational, and patriotic music, and sometimes poetry, most all of which has a definite Western flair. We have a wonderful guest with us today that is full of wit and wisdom. But before I bring him on, let's listen to his piece called The Flag.
The Flag.
With your permission, I would like to indulge in a little naked patriotism. The United States, during my lifetime, has become a nation like none other on earth. Not because it is the most powerful nation on earth, but because we, more times than I can count, have taken the side of the oppressed with no intention to conquer, rule, or pillage. In the act of offering our assistance, we have sacrificed blood and money and lives. We have beat ourselves up. We have questioned our motives. Our leaders have engaged in heated debate about the hows and the whys, but we continue to be the single brightest light for the world's mistreated. We will take on the schoolyard bully. In spite of all our mistakes, missteps, misjudgments, and misgivings, the world today would be a completely different place if our country had turned its back on the injustices and inhumanities that relentlessly stalk the globe. Supporting the troops and their families on the front lines in the war on terror is not a partisan act. It is an act of pride, compassion, love, concern, anguish, and hope. They carry our colors into harm's way and have since 1776. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the flag that flew over Valley Forge, was torn in two by the gray and the blue, and bled through two world wars. I give you the flag that burned in the street in anger, in protest, and shame. the very same flag that covered the men who died defending her name. We now stand together, Americans all, either by choice or by birth, to honor the flag that's flown on the moon and changed the face of the earth. History will show this flag stood a friend to the hungry, the homeless, and lost. That a mixture of men as common as clay valued one thing beyond cost, and they've signed it in blood from Bunker Hill to Saigon, Kuwait, Bosnia, Kabul, Baghdad, and Toko Ri. I give you the flag that says to the world, each man has a right to be free.
Oh, I love that. In my opinion, today's guest is a national treasure. And whether he is on stage or we are just visiting, he never fails to just blow me away. Not only does he have an extraordinary... You hush up for just a minute. I'm introducing you. Not only does he have...
This is my show, remember? Oh, pardon me. Go ahead. Yes.
Well, thank you. He has an extraordinary talent for weaving ideas together to create a tapestry of words that is rich and expressive. He is just one heck of an entertainer. According to his bio, he is a cowboy poet.
Are you reading the teleprompter?
I'm not. I'm reading what I wrote.
Okay. It sounded like something I wrote.
Okay. According to his bio, he is a cowboy poet, former large animal veterinarian, and entertainer of the masses. And I love his statement. He has a narrow following, but it's deep. In my humble opinion, he is so much more. With over 25 years of performing under his belt, he has now sold over 1 million books and audios, and it doesn't stop there. He also has a weekly column, a weekly radio show, and a weekly television program. And I love that he has definitely caught the attention of non-agricultural people as well. He has been well represented in mainstream media, appearing on National Public Radio and television, Random House, USA Today, and he was even on the Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. You can actually find that on YouTube. But for me, he is so much more than simply a large animal vet turned cowboy poet. He has an insightful perspective on so many facets of our lives and is able to present them in an amazingly entertaining way. And what I really appreciate about him, you just can't find anyone more kind, generous, and down-to-earth than my friend, Baxter
Black. Give me some Kleenex. I'm weeping here.
Now you can talk, Max.
Whoa. My gosh, you got almost that right. I wrote that, ladies and gentlemen, and she's read it out of kindness of her heart. I am really impressed to be on your program, to tell you the truth, because as a person who shoots arrows into the sky to make a living, you're doing it, and it sounds like that you might be getting successful.
Oh, well, I'm working at it, partner.
Now we got to figure out how to make a little money on this.
I know. Wouldn't that be nice? You definitely. We should all be nonprofit.
But wait a minute. This is a Christian outfit, so we might best be doing it for the good of the grace of God. We could be.
I think that is the bigger goal. I would absolutely think. Now I want to know.
It is a goal.
It is always every moment of every day. But right now, I would like you to tell us a little bit about that piece that we just heard you do, the flag. What caused you to write that?
I wrote the poem a long time ago for the rodeo. Mm. You know, the rodeos need something that's 1 minute to say a prayer, so it's useful in that respect. But I think I wrote that the whole piece. I have a radio program, as you said, and columns, so I have to fill 2.5 minutes or put them together. I didn't go in the Army, but ROTC fired me, and I escaped the draft. But I was there during the Vietnam War, and my brother was over there. And when I watched the way, it's one of the great regrets of my life that I didn't stand up and say, what is the matter with you people? All these people were spitting on our soldiers coming home and calling them names. And today, you know, there are people in their 60s and 70s hanging around my age. And I don't hear many of them get up and say, you know, I am ashamed of myself, of what I do and how I treated the troops.
Mm.
So that's one of the things that, like I say, we need to support our troops. And then I wrote that piece there when we invaded Iraq or started over there. And all of these people welcomed the soldiers, and it's just changed. So people right now think, boy, the public really loves the Army. And it is a complete switch from the 30 years ago.
It is, thankfully.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it is a complete switch.
Yeah.
Well, Baxter, you know one thing? We've had a lot of times that we've gotten to visit and talk, but you know what? We never really talked much about your childhood and where you were born and how you were raised. And I don't know that you've ever really, you know, really talk about that much. So that's one of the things we really like to include on my show. So would you mind telling us a little bit about your upbringing and going, you know, whether you went to church and how that all folded into your life?
My gosh. Let me flip up in the thesaurus. Well, you know, I listen to that theme song, or maybe you do a different song every week,
well,
I assume.
Theme song. Yeah, that's our theme song, yep.
Is it?
Yep.
Have a Blessed Trail.
Yep.
And it's a great song, but when I listen to you sing, I always sort of wished I could sing like that just for an hour. or you hear somebody who is a wonderful musician, and I'd say, trade places with me just for an hour. I want to know what it feels like. You know, I am a left-handed person playing a right-handed guitar, so you could see how far I was going to get with my career. I thought I was a songwriter forever when I was a vet. And nothing, all my people play, my families are music and grew up this second and fiddlers is mostly what I grew up doing. And I started writing songs, and I wrote them. You know what the disposition of unsolicited songs are in Nashville, the trash can.
Yeah.
So I did that for a long time, but I've always been funny. I was in the, a lady told me one time, she said, never tell people you can make, learn, she said, never learn to make potato salad, because if you do, every time you're going to the party, you're going to bring the potato salad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Idaho mostly at this time, and I was in the local community. Everybody does their part, and they'd have a meeting, and they'd say, "Bill, you take care of the arena there because you've got the, you know, you've got the disc and the rake and the bucket, and let's see who's going to do the electricity." Well, I don't know. Well, who's going to sing the national anthem? Well, Belinda's going to do that. She does it all the time. And I was the guy who was, I did the pre-rodeo announcing for the Caldwell Night Rodeo and the Nampa, the Snake River Stampede and a lot of little ones. So I'd get up and I'd introduce I'd do the pre-rodeo announcing, which was all the kids riding their horses. Then I'd do the Little Britches, which is an endless, it's like being in prison, basically. But I was also the Burt Parch for the most of the rodeo queen contests around there. So I, I like Burt Parch and all these nervous young ladies that, and they have, for some reason lately, I have run into three of those ladies that were in in contests when I was Burt Parch. So I guess that's the end of my story. The rest of it gets fuzzy somewhere.
Well, you never did tell us where you were born and raised. What part of the country?
Well, I was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Well, okay. A lot of people don't. It's one of those questions. Well, my dad was from Oklahoma, and my mother was from West Virginia, and they got married on Christmas Eve, and that would have been 1944, and he shipped out. He went into got drafted in the Navy because it's still World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So he went up to Fort Schuyler. I've never been to these places. It's my history. And I'm assuming Mother went with him. Anyway, I got born up there, and he shipped out to the Pacific. And so she went back to West Virginia and waited for him to come home.
Mm.
When I was a little boy, we lived in West Virginia. Went to a one-room schoolhouse. I was the only kid in the third grade.
Oh, my goodness. That's a tiny school.
So we had, this sounds pretty primitive, but I do lapse into primitive. You know, there was a, you know, the six boys in the school would go out and pump the pump, you know, just up and down and get water for the class. And we'd have to build a fire under in the basement. It was all coal. And so I left there. We went to Texas. My dad was a college man. And then we went to New Mexico. By then I was in, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I went from there.
Wow.
How's
and
that?
Is it all of your family's musical?
All my dad's family are musical. Uncle, mm-hmm. Uncle Wade played the banjo. Chrissy didn't play anything. Uncle Bert played the guitar, and he was the first. He was the second. Grandpa played the fiddle, so he was the first fiddle. Uncle Dink played the fiddle, second fiddle, and the guitar, and Uncle Dink played the third fiddle and mandolin, and Aunt Effie played the. What did she call it? Oh, the piano and the Hawaiian slide guitar.
The Hawaiian?
Hawaiian slide guitar. And my dad, who was the youngest of the family, he played everything because, you know, he didn't have a choice. Well, you got to play this because Dink's not here.
Yeah.
So he was a good musician. And then I married Cindy Lou, and her family are Okies too, and they all play music.
So you're surrounded.
Yes. And my son, I put a mando in my son's hand when he was about six.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a good musician today. When a kid's 2 years old and he can carry a tune, you know he's going to make it somehow in the music deal. So
yes,
he's a good musician. And I'd just come home. You know, I was on the road like you are. And mm-hmm. I'd come home and, oh, we're going to play music. And I don't want to play music. And we just started out with one song, learned the chords. And then we went to the next one and the next one and the next one. And years went by. And one day he said, Dad, can I play the guitar? And I said, there's one under every bed. You know that too, don't you? I got him an electric guitar for, you know, on those $75 ones with a tiny mm-hmm. micro. And he went in his room and we never saw him again. So he's 22. He's starting his family and working boy. Good guy.
Wow.
Got a good daughter, too, by the way.
Well,
she was my cowboy.
She's your cowboy.
In Oklahoma. She was, my daughter was the president of her FFA, and she won I remember she won the top cow hand of the year award on an old horse we had called Coyote.
Yeah.
She could do the team sorting. She put the two boys over there. She said, you guys watch the gate. I got a good horse here. She did. So my kids have raised on horses.
Wow. That's so cool. Well, they have to be good kids because they have a great dad. So, you know, one thing we didn't touch on is
Wait a minute. I have to say something in here before. With all this praise, there's a lot of people listening that knew I went through a phase.
A phase?
That's all I can call it. And it's I still have tendrils that drag me off the straight and narrow. But there was a time in my life that... You know, have you ever walked down? You ever been down in Denver? It's Highway 25 goes up and down.
Okay.
I had a romance go bad on me, and just to forget it. I actually walked down the center of I-25 from, it's about a 4-mile walk till I got to South Broadway. And so anyway, I got some wild stories, and I look back and I can't imagine I did. I got arrested in the Orange County Airport for molesting a stamp machine. I mean, that's another part of your life you don't want ever, you're not real proud of. Well, it's against the law. It's a federal offense. But it's a story unto itself, you know.
It is. It is. So let's circle back. Yeah, were you raised in church with the way you guys bounced from state to state as you were growing up?
Well, my dad's folks were hardcore. I say hardcore. It's the same church I go to, but it's Baptist church. My mother was a Methodist, so she really didn't have a chance. Personal things happened in our family, so things didn't work out the way we all planned. So a time went by, and I always believed, but you wouldn't know it by the way I acted, I don't think. But I never worried about it. And then I married well, and I had a son. And so in the middle of my life, I actually, the two biggest influences on my Christian walk are my wife and my son.
Mm.
And that's a odd way to be. And, of course, I always went to, didn't always go to church, but when we got married, we started going to church.
Mm-hmm.
So it all came back, and I'm trying to be a better man. Sometimes it works, and well, I don't know any other way to say it. You know, you change in life.
You do, you do, and we all evolve and grow. I hope we always keep evolving and growing. Always.
Mm-hmm. And people have their own way of doing that. Well,
yes,
what does
do.
It for you? Do you read the Bible all the time, or what makes it work for you?
I do get in there. When you're on the road, it's difficult to have like a home church and that kind of thing. So to me, just getting in the Word and just kind of wandering around in there and see where it takes me. Sometimes I'm very deliberate, and sometimes it's just whatever kind of strikes me. But that's kind of my grounding. Get a lot out of that, but
have verses that you like or have memorized?
I have all kinds of them. I'm not good with the memory. I need to put them all to music. I've tried memorizing scripture, but to put it up, I think I need to put it to music to get it.
So
memorized.
God writes the lyrics and you put it to music. Okay, I like
that. Yeah, I do. Oh gosh. Well, speaking of lyrics, we have a piece that Vicki sent me. Your girl Friday, who takes care of a lot of your stuff for you.
Yes, she
does. She sent me a wonderful piece called Grandpa Tommy Saved the World. Can you tell us about that piece, and then we're going to listen to it?
Yeah, well, you have to remember, to put this in perspective, I have a radio program and a column, and I write the column, and then usually it becomes a radio program, and then sometimes it gets on RFD, and if it's really good, it gets in a book or on the stage. So this is one of those stories I wrote around Veterans Day, possibly. My mother remarried, and she married Grandpa Tommy, and he was in the Navy like my father had been, but he was on a troop ship. And so he was in the Pacific for 3 years, and so he told us his Navy stories, but he was always, well, you'll hear in this. So this is Grandpa Tommy. They came to live with us in their last 5 or 10 years, and we built them a house. And I was blessed to have that sweet woman take care of and just pay her back a little bit. So this was, we were sitting up there, they had a television in their little house, and so I'm sitting up there, and my son's up there, and he's about, 12 or 13, and really into the Army, and had a Marine poster on his wall. And so we're watching one of these History Channel things, and I guess that explains it.
Okay.
Go ahead and play it.
Let's listen to Grandpa Tommy Save the World.
Call the dogs and put out the fire. This is Baxter Black on Monday, here to start the week with a little peek at Grandpa Tommy Save the World. What makes America the most productive, generous country on earth? Well, it's ordinary people like us working together to achieve extraordinary things. B&W builds the trailer hitches that hook the loads that haul the grain, the coal, the cattle, cotton, gas, horses, and RVs that keep America on the road. Quality made, employee-owned, and customer-tuned B&W trailer hitches working together to keep America proud. We were watching the History Channel at Grandma's house. It was a story about the USS Enterprise being attacked. It was 1945. They were describing acts of heroism that occurred, stories of men risking their lives, staying with wounded comrades instead of swimming to safety, stories that never made the paper or were recognized, but were remembered only by those brave souls who dog-paddled in the waves next to a burning ship 3 miles above the sea floor. It was one of those moments when my son and I were both engrossed. I said, "Isn't it funny that the only person in this house who really understands what we're watching is asleep in his chair?" Grandpa Tommy, Kansas farm boy, junior petty officer on a rebuilt World War I destroyer operating as a troop ship on the Pacific Ocean. Now asleep in his chair, 90 years old. He has no scrapbook of his service, no contact with those of his caliber who went through the cauldron of war, no medals or pins commemorating his contribution. When the subject of war comes up, his lighthearted response is, "I saved the world." Well, it's his joke. It comes and goes so quickly, and the subject changes and the opportunity to ponder his answer disappears, which is unfortunate because he and countless thousands of others did save the world, and anyone who doubts that Germany and Japan had intentions of conquering us all is deluding themselves. Seldom has freedom and slavery, or good and evil, been so clearly defined. Elected leaders ride into battle on the backs of men like Grandpa Tommy, who answer the call, and if they are lucky, come home to the welcoming arms of a thankful country. Political leaders are honored on President's Day. Grandpa Tommy is honored on Flag Day, July 4th, December 7th, Memorial Day, and I guess every day that I draw a free breath. And I am proud. I'm going to tell him that I appreciate that he saved the world as soon as he wakes up. This is Baxter Black on Monday, brought to you by B&W Turnover Bowl.
Melinda, I didn't realize Vicki left the commercials in.
Oh, that's okay. But my husband and I have a B&W hitch on our truck, so I'm fine with that.
Well, they are a good company. They're one of my sponsors, obviously, and they are proud. Well, you heard the commercial. You know, I write them, but they give me the idea. They want it known that they are the only ones who are making the turnover balls here in America.
Yep.
And now, just for your information, all of the trucks, you know, the 150s and the 2500s, they are now coming out with a gooseneck ball. But, of course, they're coming They're made in China. And so I just have to put a plug in there for B&W.
There you go. They'll be really happy you did that, Baxter.
Gary said I need to do something funny. So are you ready?
Sure. Go ahead and do something funny.
I did this one on Johnny Carson.
Okay.
It's called All I Want for Christmas. All my clothes are laundry. All my socks are full of holes. I've got TP in my hat band and cardboard in my soles. I've stuffed the want ad section underneath the long john shirt, and my jacket's held together by dehorn and blood and dirt. And the leather on my bridle been fixed so many times, my horse looks like that fence post where we hang the baler twine. When I bought that horse, he was as good as most around. But when I sold him last month, he brought 13 cents a pound. I've been unable lately to invest in purebred cows since my ex-wives and their lawyers are dependents of mine now. See, my first wife took my saddle, and the second skinned my hide, and the third one got my deer head, and the last one took my pride. I've had a run of bad luck, but I think it's going to peak, because my dog that used to bite me got run over just last week. So all I want for Christmas is whatever you can leave, but I'd settle for a new wife who would stay through New Year's Eve. Some things you just don't have to make up. I told you I had a sordid past.
Well, we all have our pieces of that, I think. Nobody's immune to difficult things, I think. This makes us who we are today. But, you know, Baxter, how did you come? I mean, you got somewhere along the line, you decided you wanted to be a veterinarian, and you did that. And you were a large animal vet for, I'm not sure how long, but, and then.
13 years.
How did you transition from vet to cowboy poet? What? Tell us that story.
Well, I will preface it by saying I am not a cowboy poet on purpose. I had a good job. I started when I was going to vet school working for a big cattle company, and so I was in the feedlots, and they had three or four of them around the country, and I'd go to each one different summers, and then they hired me. And I started my veterinary practice in Thermal, California, which ought to bring chills down your spine. That's where that big Indio show is, by the way, or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
So I started down there, and then that company changed hands and decided they didn't need me, and so off we went. So I got a job in Idaho, and I went up there, and it was a big outfit. Man, I really liked it. You know, we had 300 horses, just saddle horses we're talking about. And, we had 10,000 mother cows. We had 100,000 cattle on feed. We had a 1,000 cow dairy and 20,000 range ewes, plus a feed store.
Wow. That's massive.
And I was the company veterinarian and other things, but it was a job. That's how I got to learn buckaroo. I grew up in the Southwest where we were cowboys and you have leggings and you're in the brush and you go up there and it's a buckaroo world. First time I saw somebody wearing chinks, I thought, my gosh, this guy, I could lend him some money. I mean, he ran out of leather and he couldn't finish. I mean, I didn't have a clue what it was because we never saw those down there.
Yep.
So anyway, it was Buckarooville, and I liked that just as well. And that lasted 10 years because I had marital problems or personal problems, and I had to leave town, basically, which I did, leave the state. Mm-hmm. And went to Colorado and took a job with a veterinary company that involved a lot of traveling. And in the world of agriculture, there are things they call producer meetings. And the salesman of whatever the product is, feed or animal health, they'll go out and they'll get a bunch of people in their community, whether it's cattle people or feedlots or farmers, and they'll bring them in, and they'll buy them all lunch, and I would get up and I would give the lecture, as it were, and then he would the salesman would follow up with the products that we had to do it. And I guess the reason I'm actually a cowboy poet is because I refused to carry slides. And in those days, you had to have slides projector up there, and I have all these pictures of, you know, I was a veterinarian, so I cut up every dead animal I could see to see how, what killed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have all these pictures, and, you know, it looked like, you know, pizza sometimes or dog bones. But I didn't, I know, but it's my world, I remember. So I refused to carry the slide, so I made my points with humor because I'd begun to write poems, oh, probably when I was 30 years old. And by now I'm 35, 36, and lost everything and starting back. And so I would take a poem to illustrate the poem or illustrate the condition or the animal or whatever. And that way I didn't have to carry a big box of slides around.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned out to be more entertaining than informative. So I became in demand. And so in a very short period of time, people were calling this pharmaceutical company to ask this lunatic veterinarian, could he come out and give them a little program and maybe stay around and get up and say something at the banquet. And so in a short space of 2 years, I did 180 producer meetings.
Wow.
Remember, I was on the road. I was broke. I was paying alimony. I was living in a little apartment and trying to pull things together and not in very much control of my sanity or behavior.
Mm.
And so 2 years after that, so these people were actually, the ag people were calling and asking, like I said, could he come out? And so by the time they changed hands and let me go because I was a new guy, that was 2 years, the phone kept ringing.
Mm.
And they would call the drug company and they'd say, well, he doesn't work here anymore. And, well, call them. So they'd call me, and that's when I hired a secretary, not Vicky, but another one in Colorado. So I kept my veterinary licenses up for 5 years, thinking this speaking isn't really a job. And I was doing 100 of them, which was a lot for me, 100 of them a year for about 5 or 6 years. And by the time my vet showed her up, I said, I think this is what I am. And so I let my licenses go. And one of the, you know, God works in mysterious ways.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I think that turned me into what I am is that I, let me see, what was I going to say? It was really something clever. Oh, I have never had to solicit, the speaking jobs.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And that carried on. I mean, you know, I'm off the road now, but that, you know, they just kept calling and calling.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize how big a blessing that was until I run into my friends that have agents and booking agents and management agents. And
mm-hmm.
it also let me choose a way to go. And I got to know the guys in Nashville a little bit because I did thought I was a songwriter. And I watched those poor guys battle and battle and battle. And if they actually got famous, it only lasted for 5 years. and then he'd go back down and so I just set out some rules. I said, you know, you're never going to book the same show 2 years in a row. Because by the third time, they won't have you back, and they won't have you back forever. So that did it. And I also remarried to Cindy Lou. And I could be on the road, and I was just there. But I was in a position to be able to, let me give you an example, maybe. I got a call. This would have been about 5 or 6 years after I got started. I got a call from Random House. Mm-hmm. They said, we'd like to publish your poetry. And I had already sold quite a wad by then. And I said, you know, I appreciate the offer, but I don't think I really want to do that. She said, what? This is Random House. I said, I know, but, you know, if you buy my poetry and put it in a book, you own it. And I would have to get your permission to read my own poems and publish them again or do whatever I wanted to do with them. And so I said, I'm not going to do that. And one of the reasons I could make a decision like that was I had already crashed and burned. You know, it's like you can't hurt me anymore. I'm going to do it the way I want to because it doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just turned her down, and she called back the next day, and she said, well, do you have anything else? Well, I said, I've got this old novel I wrote 10 years ago, and it was called Hey Cowboy, Want to Get Lucky? She said, well, send it to me. So I sent it to her, and she wrote back, and she said, you have to rewrite this. I said, I don't know how. Well, if we help you rewrite this, edit this for you, can we publish it? I said, sure. Because, and by the way, that book is still in print, sold over 100,000 copies.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have two sequels, and none of them have ever equaled Hey Cowboy, Want to Get Lucky. It's Hey Cowgirl, Need a Ride, and then another one called Ride, Cowboy, Ride.
Oh, my goodness.
But
that's
I had
Random House cancer.
You know, and I've another little deal. I got called up. This lady wanted for me to come and do an audition to be in a movie. And I said, well, I've never been in any movies. This was probably 2005, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, we want you to come. I said, well, let me read the script. And I said, well, where'd you get my name? And she told me somebody that I can't remember. And so I read it, and I realized that it was an R-rated movie. And one of the things that have always been a guideline for me, just because of the company I keep,
mm-hmm.
not that I'm that decent a human being, I don't think, but the people that I make a living off of, who listen to my column and buy my books and come to my programs, they're agricultural people. They're farmers and horse people and, you know, veterinarians and dairy people. They're all just people of the land, if I can put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read it, and I turned it back, and I said, well, you know, I can't. I really like it, but I can't do anything that's, you know, it's got to be PG because my audience, I want my audience to be able to buy anything or come to anything I'm involved with,
mm-hmm.
and not be afraid to bring their Mormon aunt or their kids. So
mm-hmm.
that's the way I've. And you have to stand up to do that. Because I remember when they were going to rewrite Hey Cowboy, Want to Get Lucky, I'd written that in that stage of my life where I didn't have much responsibility, I had some really funny lines, but they were, you know, profane.
Oh.
So when I told her I'm going to have to, she said, we'll do this. And I said, I'm going to have to rewrite the book and make it PG. And this is a lady on Madison Avenue.
Right.
She said, well, there's nothing wrong with it. What are you talking about? I said, there's nothing wrong in your world because you don't live in the same world I do. These are Madison Avenue snarlers.
Right,
and it's embarrassing for me. I actually turned a book down. It was a big, beautiful book about the country, and the author told the publisher they would like me to write the foreword. And I've seen it, and somebody else did it afterwards. But I called the lady back, because she'd asked me 2 or 3 times. She was the booking agent for this guy or whatever, publishing. And I said, I've looked at the book that he's doing, and I think it's beautiful, and I would be glad to do it, especially if he really wants me to. And she let out a big screech and, you know, just cussed like a sailor.
Mm.
And my heart just went red, because I've had to deal with those people in Madison Avenue, and they are foul-mouthed, coarse. I don't know what their real lives are like, but I'm not against cussing, but you don't do it in company. You know,
my goodness.
So I called her back 5 minutes later, and I said, you know, I apologize. I'm going to have to retract writing that forward. And it won one of the books of the year to Oklahoma Western Heritage thing.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, "What? Why?" I said, you know, I have dealt with Madison Avenue over several books, and I'm just sick and tired of having to sit here and listen to your foul mouth. I tried to put it in a nicer way.
A little more.
She said, well, I didn't say anything. I said, that's exactly right. You don't have a clue. And I'm not going to put myself in a position where I have to call someone and listen to that. And they're all women.
So
you can turn that. The movie I turned down won the Academy Award for the best movie of the year.
Wow.
It was No Place for Old Men.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And after I saw it, I said, well, I wouldn't want to be in it anyway.
Wow.
So I made the right decision.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I think part of the Western culture and our cowboy poetry, it's the kind of stuff that you can bring your family to and not have to worry.
Absolutely. And, you know, the woman doesn't realize how powerful words are, and they have no clue that what they just fling out there, what that's really all about. They don't get it.
Being showed around one. I was doing an interview on public radio. This is in Washington, D.C., and the lady was escorting me around, and here was a 22-year-old girl, and she's getting on NPR, and, you know, I had to walk out of the room just because she was so colorful.
Oh, wow.
They
don't understand. No, they don't realize. And, you know, this kind
and
of
I have written some poems that are just awful, but they never, you know, they never
you don't,
get
you don't
in
share
a mixed
them
company
you
situation. So, you know, I'm trying to have the best of both worlds, and it isn't necessarily that way. But my public persona, I don't want people to never mind.
I understand it's you're being respectful. You're being respectful of your audience and respectful of the people who follow you, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
And this conversation we're having right now actually leads perfectly into another piece that Vicki sent us called Just Words. And so that's That's a really, really interesting and powerful piece, and I'm really eager for everybody to hear that. And so let's listen now to Just Words.
They were just words. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Reagan to Gorbachev at the Brandenburg Gate Berlin Wall, 1987. A chance of rain, the weatherman in Iowa during the 93 flood. Give me liberty or give me death. Patrick Henry, 1775. I wish I'd never read this book so I could read it again for the first time. Dan Trimble about Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea, 1992. The grass is always greener over the septic tank. Irma Bombach, 1976. We often underestimate the value of words. Good job, son. Oh, that's the best cobbler I ever ate. Did you paint that yourself? I'm really proud of you. Thank you, love. We underestimate the power of words. You shouldn't let that kid beat you. Maybe you ought to lose some weight, huh? You should have tried harder. Not again. They've heard those stories before. You do that every time. There are people whose opinions we truly value. There are people whose praise we'd die for. And they're often two different things. Sometimes we genuinely would like to improve ourselves. You're letting go of your rope too soon. Give him his head. Don't make a friend. Be a friend. Sometimes we just need encouragement. You did the best you could. Hey, looked like you won from where I sat. Sure runs better after you worked on it. Well, most everyone is the most important person in someone's life. And it is no small responsibility. And it should be a crime if we don't realize and recognize that importance. Because what you say can have such a long-lasting effect. I believe you got the makings of a world champion. Ty Murray's mother. I know you can do it, but be careful. James A. Lovell Jr.'s wife. Believe in yourself. Martin Luther King's Sunday school teacher. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. JFK. Write about what you know. My college English professor, after giving me an F on a poem I wrote for a class assignment. You'll never amount to anything. Too many of us, too many times. Words, like burrs under a blanket, like nails in a coffin, like a single match in a sea of gasoline.
Hello?
I went away.
Yes, you did, and I went away.
Oh, my goodness.
Were we supposed to be going away?
I don't think we were, no. Hopefully we can just keep
going. Goodness,
control.
We have somebody to blame, Belinda.
Yes, Gary did it.
Gary, if that happens again, I'm going to have to let you go.
Gonna have to let him go. I don't know.
I have to let him go.
And yes, I don't blame either one of you, by the way.
So we just keep this rolling, and we'll just it's live radio, as a matter of fact. So we'll just keep it rolling. I'm thinking, is that okay, Gary? We just keep going.
Just keep on.
All right, perfect. Okay, Baxter. One of the things that was really fun for me was when Diane Tribbett and I got to come visit you on your ranch in Benson.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful. It's just so typical of an Arizona ranch and this wonderful sprawling house and And there's a couple of things that I really stand out that are fun that I would love for you to talk about. And one is your rock collecting. I thought I was bad. My poor husband would agree with you that I'm bad. But you literally have shipped home rocks from different places, have you not?
Yes. We built this house in the early 2000, maybe somewhere in there. And while Cindy was building the house, I was building the corrals. And around here, the countryside isn't always flat, or at least where I am, as you saw. And mm-hmm. so we have some terrain that is up and down and back and forth, and it's hard to build pipe fence. Pipe fence is West Texas,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the feedlots I work in, they're pipe. But I'm kind of a wood, I'm thinking railroad ties and rocks. Are you familiar with feng shui?
Yes. Well, I know, I've heard it. I don't know exactly what it is, but yes.
Feng shui means that everything in the room or in your place is in harmony with the next.
Okay. Okay.
You know the opposite of feng shui.
What's that?
Wabi sabi.
Okay.
And you know I make all that stuff up, don't you? Wabi sabi. Wabi sabi is the idea that there is beauty in imperfection.
All righty. Okay.
Got that? So you go
yes.
out to my place. And I mean, it's got rusty bolts, and it's got railroad ties that our locomotive couldn't turn over. And we got rock walls that are 2 feet wide, and it's wabi-sabi.
It's wabi-sabi.
So, on the rock deal, because I'm trying to figure out how to, do I just build wood fences, or do I put up panels? And because I've always made commercials, and I had this TV show in mind, and so I like a place where it's picture squee, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And someone can come out, and I mean, we have local photographers bring people out here, and we just say sure. They go up and take pictures of people's families, and so I needed something that would, in my brain, I didn't have the idea, but somehow, unconsciously I did, that I need a place to take pictures and make movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all functional, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I'd build rock walls, and I grew up in Las Cruces, and if you go to El Paso or Cruces, there are miles and miles and miles of rock walls. But they have rocks that come out of the Vado, I forgot what, where you dig rocks out of. Anyway, and they're flat on both sides, but they don't have that here, so I have to buy rocks that have one face that's flat, and the back of it might be, you know, all different kinds of shapes. So I have longer ones so that both sides of this rock fence can have a flat side of something.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in our brain, I started building these rock walls, and then you might be able to explain the motive of why people bring rocks home.
call to you.
Is that it? Okay.
They call to you. They call to me. They do.
Yes. I've seen her up there in Washington, D.C. You can't take her there because she's up there on the top trying to chop off Lincoln's head because she can see a great place for it. So I'd go on the road, and when it was over, or, you know, my deal is typically you fly somewhere and then you rent a car and go somewhere.
Yeah.
And I brought back rocks from places that I spoke that had a little more meaning. I would, if I could sell all my books, then I'd have an empty box. And then
to bring your rocks home.
Bring my rocks home. I shipped rocks home on those airplanes. And I have I have a map I didn't show you, but I actually have a map of pictures of everyone I've put up and what it looked like when I put it in, and a tape across the front of it to show where it was from.
Wow.
So one of these days,
I'll show me that. I wish I'd been that organized. Wow. Tell about that rock. Don't you have a rock? Wasn't it shaped like Texas? And you had your Iron Man was building the wall.
I have a wonderful cowboy. Now, you know, I have been able to spend a good portion of my life around cowboys and cattlemen, and they're not necessarily the same thing, but they can be. Cattlemen and cowboys. What was the question?
Oh, about the rock shaped like Texas.
Oh, yes. And I'm out here on the Mexican border, and I have spoken Spanish for a long time. In fact, I didn't speak English to my son till he was 10.
Wow.
So it would not be uncommon that I have a man working for me, and still do, who doesn't speak English. And so it's all Spanish. And he is a vaquero in the truest sense. He's not a caballero, which is what Gary probably thinks of, a caballero. Caballero is a knight, or a gentleman on a horse, or a horseman. But he can also be a vaquero, but a vaquero is not it doesn't have the class and distinction of a caballero.
Okay.
But when you see a vaquero at work, it just makes your head swim. I see some fancy roping people spinning ropes and stuff, but when you see those boys rope something out of the brush at 20 miles an hour... It just makes you, they're just so good. So this is Francisco, and he and I learned how to hang rock together, and he was much better at it. I just let him finish the walls. And I have a friend, the Vaughns, they're in Brighton, Colorado, and they have a cement plant, and they make all those big stuff out of cement, but he made these little steps, is what I call them. They're about a foot by foot by foot, and you can make tiles out of them. And he made one in the shape of the bucking horse from Wyoming. He was impressed into the concrete, and he brought that down, and he said, "Here, I'd like to contribute to your rock fence." And I said, "Well, I guess I can find a place." And then he went to the car and he brought back another one, and it was one of these big steps. You know, these guys are like 3 inches thick.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Oh, you'll really like this one." And it was in the shape of Texas. And I said, "You know, I lived in Texas. I like Texas, but I don't know that I want Texas up in my rock wall." So I took it and I went way down to the end of the fence, the wall that Francisco was working on, and I just said, "You know, put this in the wall some when we get down here somewhere." And months went by, and I came home one day, and from the road, and I'm walking down to see his progress, and there is that step of Texas. And if everybody will hold up their hand, hold up your right hand, and let your thumb out, you're looking at the back of your hand, and you see the thumb, El Paso's way out there on the thumb. Okay? And so if you're looking at Texas, you can see where El Paso is. Now rotate your hand a full quarter so that your thumb is sticking up. And go just a little further, yes, just a little further. I'm looking at it, about to break my arm. And I said, he had put it in crooked. And I said, "Francisco, usted sabe que es este?" "No, pero pensando, y yo pienso es un pato." I thought and I thought, and I think it's a duck. And when you look at it, turn your hand around like that a little bit, it does sort of look like a duck. Because the wings, never mind. And, of course, I remember you had Red Steagall on a couple of weeks ago. Red came by and I said, Red, I got to show you something. I took him down there and he never cracked a smile. He said, well, doesn't he know what the shape of Texas is? And I said, no. Can you draw me a map of Sonora?
Oh, good point.
Anyway, he laughed.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, God. Well, you know, another fun story that I loved was when you walked us down to your, you have a wonderful tack shed, if you want to call it that, your tech room, tech building, and there's a great hitching rail outside of that thing, and there's a really wonderful story about how that came to live with you. You want to tell that?
Yes, you talk about bringing things home.
Yes.
Ed Bruce, who wrote Mamas Don't Let Your Babies, has been a friend of mine for a long time, and we still talk, and she always still sends me those wonderful chocolate mud pies, yeah, mud pies,
right,
for Christmas. Anyway, I was back there, and I was walking around, and Ed always treated me nice, him and Judith. I said, Ed, I want to put something on my place that I'm building here, that kind of a memory of you or something for you. Well, what do you want? I said, I'd like one of those cedar posts you got out there. He said, those cedar posts, the ones that in that pile that I just tore out? I said, yeah, they'll last forever. Well, I guess you could take it, but how are you going to get it home? Oh, I said, I guess I'll just check it.
On the airplane.
On the airplane. And we made a bet. You know, he had a party that night, and it had to do with the amount of weight that you could check it. And anyway, we had a big party. And so I take this to the airport in Nashville, where you are, or no, where Gary is, right?
Where Gary is, yep.
Yeah. And so I go to the airport, and I've got a baler twine handle kind of hooked on that sucker so I could, you know, on one end, one on the other, so I could hit it. And the post was, I think it was 6.5 feet long. So I'm packing it like this, and I got a little tag on it that says my name. And the lady says, well, do you have anything to check? I said, yeah, sure do this. And so I tried to set it up there where they weigh things, and she said, well, you can't ship that. I said, I can't. I mean, this is a 75-year-old cedar post. Well, if you don't, we can't ship it. It might get damaged. I said, well, I just want to put it up above me into my seat. But I remember saying, well, you know, what if it gets damaged? It's not wrapped. My gosh. Oh, well, she let me do it.
Oh, God.
I was in Ronan, Montana one time, and the airlines weren't as big as they were today. And just as I'm leaving, I've spoken to their group. They walked out on the tarmac with me where I was going to get on this plane. And he said, we want to give you something. And they brought out the biggest, beautiful buffalo head that's hanging in here on my wall. I said, thank you, this is beautiful, but where am I going to put it? Of course, it's not boxed, it's not anything. In the end, I had to buy it a seat for $75 and buckle it inside me and brought it home.
Oh, gosh. I love it. I love it. Oh, gosh. Well, you know, we're going to do another piece now that you've written that I really enjoy. We just lost a family dog just a few months ago that we just loved, and it really put me in mind of that. And this is because they are, for me, so much more than these pets. You know, our dogs just become,
yeah,
they work.
Well, they
with
become
us,
part of your family.
They do. They really do. And
yep,
you just did a wonderful piece called Just a Dog. So let's listen to that.
Well, I'm a veterinarian, remember, and I've had to put a lot of them to sleep.
Yep, it's hard. So we're going to listen to Just a Dog.
You were just a dog, but a good dog, right from the start. Your loyalty was never in question. And what you didn't know because I never took the time to teach you. When you were young, I was harder on you. I expected you to understand the basics, and you learned them. A bad dog was like a whip on your back. But when uncontrollable instinct got you in trouble, I didn't hold it against you. I doctored you up, changed your bed, and remembered that reason gets left behind in the heat of passion, be it skunks, dips, or cloven hooves. You were patient with the young. Pups or kids, they pulled your hair and barked around you in circles and rode on your back. I never had to worry. They were safe with you. You suffered the indignities of veterinary examinations, injections, probings, and overnight incarcerations, refusing always to lift your leg under anyone's roof. You posed for pictures, rode on loads like an acrobat, and endured spring clippings, and yet never lost your sense of dignity. A fierce guardian of your territory, you did your best to protect us, and I knew better than to shout you down at 2 a.m. I always figured you were barking for a purpose. Old age was not unkind to you. Despite the hearing loss, cataracts, and stiff joints, you carried on. Sure, I had to help you get in the pickup, but you were part of the crew. I noticed you ate less, slept late, and turned gray, but you never lost your enthusiasm for being part of the outfit. People debate if dogs have a heaven. Well, I'm not sure that matters. What is heaven to a dog? Enough to eat, something to chase, shade in the summer, someone to scratch your ears and pay you a little attention now and then. All I know is that you added to our life. Companion, listener, guardian, and a connection to part of nature that we tend to overlook because we're too busy worrying about the minutiae of life. You reminded us to appreciate a sunny day, a bone to chew, and a kind word, and you'll be missed around here. You were just a dog, but you'll be in my heaven. Rest in peace, old friend.
Oh, that's such a sweet piece, Baxter. I love
well,
it.
I came up with a little, trying to tell my son. Kids are the most, you know, they go out and they have to feed them, and that dog follows them right to the bus stop or right to, and they wait the same place for them to come home, and it's the joy of their life. And I'd see my son get off and just walk right through the dogs, and the dogs look around and say, "Well, wait, oh,
we've been waiting for you."
Yeah. Well, I kind of adapted this. I said, "You know, there's always time to pet your dog."
Yes. Yeah. That's true. Well, gosh, Baxter, I can't believe how this time is just flowing, even with our little hiccup in the middle, our little technical difficulty, but it's been a wonderful show, and just thank you so much. I know you're really busy, have a lot on your plate, and I really appreciate you taking the
Call
time.
Call me anytime.
Oh, I mean, will.
We forgot to think. We forgot to talk about practicing forgiveness and mercy to all who offend.
Yes, we did. We did.
We
will
did,
have,
and we
have
tried to
so
think.
Much fodder for
the
another
Ten
show.
Commandments, or some worse than others, and
I don't, we have
know,
a lot
I got
to
lots
talk
of these
about.
Things on my mind.
Yes, well, we will definitely have to have you back on, and we can explore some of that. Exploring Baxter Black's mind, that could get a little precarious, I think, maybe. But we're up for it. We'll go there.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for everything. Good luck. God bless you.
Well, before you go, two things. How can people get hold of you? What's the best way for them to track down your
Baxter
radio show?
Black, BaxterBlack.com.
Okay.
And after you hang up, I need to get your email.
I will get that for you. I will absolutely get that for you. And also, we're going to close your little segment out. I have a little closing thoughts I want to share with everybody. But
okay. Can I listen?
Oh, absolutely, if you would like. And but there's a really wonderful piece that Vicki sent that she said it's brand new that you wrote called Cowboy Christianity. And would you set that up for us before we listen to it?
Okay. Do I wait, or am I doing it now?
No, go ahead. No, just tell us how you came to write it and what it was about for you.
Oh, well, we're in turmoil in the United States today, And it's just like Washington, D.C. is dizzy. And I have watched the, you know, 80% of the people in the United States are Christians, claim to be, and I claim to be. And I never, when someone says I'm a Christian, I don't argue with them. I don't, you know, you can't be a Christian. You're not a good boy. No, you can. Means believing, whatever it is. So I never question people's belief. And we, right now, it seems to be, are having huge things with diversity. Let me stick in one little thing in here. Mm-hmm. I hope, well, I know I will never see the day, but maybe you will, when we don't have to have designated Americans.
Mm.
I mean, you have to, I was filling in this thing. Are you an African American? Are you a bit American? One of these days, we won't have to have designated, and then nobody can be offended.
Mm.
And nobody can, you know, and because right now, we're doing the exact opposite of what this is intended. We are segregating ourselves instead of equalizing.
Mm-hmm.
The United States, the Constitution said all men are created equal, but now they're not. Now they're designated, and if you're a certain designation, you can do this, and this way you can do this, and which has nothing to do with the Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
But people are backing off. They're a little too timid. You know, this would be the Lutheran way. Well, we don't want to say anything. We don't want them to think we're really pushing them. Of course, Baptists do. We say, hey, take my hand. Let me introduce you to God.
Yeah.
So we're not afraid to say that, and I don't think we should be. And when I heard Trevor Brazil take it to the top, well, that's the story.
Wow. Well, let's close out our segment. And thank you again, Baxter, for being with us. And let's close out this segment with Cowboy Christianity.
A funny thing happened at the rodeo. I saw the power of prayer. The National Finals Rodeo, the NFR, last December in Las Vegas, came at the end of a tumultuous year of savage terrorism around the world and in our own front yard. The news media has been awash with violence. The deliverers of the death and chaos claim that their God and their Bible, the Quran, commands Muslims to kill the infidels, and thus they are justified in doing it. Well, obviously, most Muslims don't translate it that way, nor do the victims of what is now known as radical Islam. Yet the shootings, bombings, and murders continue unabated. Americans are walking circles on the sidewalk waiting for someone in our government to give us marching orders, some direction to protect ourselves, someone willing to take a stand. Washington, D.C. is dizzy. Protesters would have the First Amendment selectively eliminated so only they can talk. And amidst all this, our leaders threaten us with politically correct no-nos that turn us into liars, deceivers, and fools. What's missing in this picture? Our government has forsaken the strongest force that unites us, God. It is the Christians the terrorists fear the most. Terrorists watch with glee as America continues to desert the bedrock of our country. Christianity is the backbone of our Constitution, our laws, our moral compass, and our daily lives. And ISIS knows it and is sworn to wipe us out. The NFR is a sport born, supported, and loved primarily by rural people. It is the Super Bowl of rodeos. 77% of Americans are Christians, 3 out of 4. The belief in God is obvious at the rodeo performances that begins with a prayer. How many other sporting events, from Little League to the World Series, begin with a prayer? How many grade school days start with a prayer? How many political speeches begin with a prayer? Muslims pray publicly 5 times a day. Are Muslims forced to join Christians in prayer? No. This is a free country. But it is a Christian country. The final night none other than the winningest professional rodeo cowboy in the world, reigning all-around champion Trevor Brazil, in front of 15,000-plus television, spoke for most of us during his acceptance speech. And I paraphrase, he gave thanks to God, said America was built on Christian faith, and we can be merciful and forgiving to others, but that does not include forsaking our beliefs just because it offends somebody. In times of war, our armed forces are visible. At the rodeo, they are recognized for their service. 15,000 flags were passed out. When Lee Greenwood sings, God bless the USA, the roof comes off the arena. You can hear it as far away as Tulsa. Iran and Saudi Arabia are described as Muslim countries. In our world, the United States is described as a Christian country. In our world, God and country are inseparable, as are America and Christianity. It's common in rodeo for a rider or roper to genuflect or point upwards after his run. Do a Tebow, I guess. We don't mock him. We know who he's talking to.
Oh, I love that piece. Oh, my gosh. I hope that you've enjoyed this show with Baxter as much as I did. It was so fun for me to learn more about my dear friend. And I realized that an hour show is definitely not enough time with this remarkable cowboy. And I have to say, in the midst of all the fun and seriousness, a big takeaway for me from Baxter is how important it is stand for something you believe in and to do the right thing. In Deuteronomy 6:18, the scripture tells us, and you shall do what is right and good in the sight of the Lord. And that puts me in mind of a couple of sayings that I really like. One is by Dr. David Jeremiah. So if you believe in something that's good, honest, and right, stand up for it. And the second one I think is equally as powerful, but I have no idea who wrote it. I'll have to look that up. And it is, if you stand for nothing, you will fall for anything. During the course of my devotions this last week, I ran across something that also ties into today's show. It's a quote by Dr. Theodore Hesburgh, or Father Ted, as he was known by, and he was the priest that was the president of the University of Notre Dame for an unprecedented 35 years. And he was noted for not only tangling with the White House, but with the Vatican as well, over what he thought was the right thing to do. And I quote, my basic principle is that you don't make decisions because they are easy. You don't make them because they are popular. You make them because they are right. I love that. And that brings me to my closing thought, which is really one of my absolute favorites. When I was with my husband for his United States Military Academy class reunion in West Point, New York, we were visiting the cadet chapel located on the campus, and posted on the wall was the cadet prayer. It is a beautiful thing that I hope you all have an opportunity to read sometime, but my favorite part of it, and I think one of the most powerful pieces of that prayer reads, make us to choose the harder right instead of the easier wrong, and never to be content with a half-truth when the whole can be won. Well, that wraps our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest, the incomparable Baxter Black, for visiting and sharing with us today. We are definitely going to have him back on. And there is never a big enough thank you for my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. Please check out all of the other fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio, and remember that they are all archived for you to listen to at your convenience. You can even download our nifty mobile app that allows you to take us on the go with you. And if you like our shows, please help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today, and until next week, may all of your trails be blessed.
While in the studio preparing this album, we were casually experimenting with America the Beautiful, with no intent of putting it on an album. but the lyrics reminded us of how fortunate we are to live in this wonderful country with all the freedoms we enjoy.
We would like to dedicate this song to the veterans and the servicemen and women who preserve and protect our precious freedoms, even today.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesty, above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed His grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood, from sea to shining sea.
Oh, beautiful for patriot's dream that sees beyond the years, thine alabaster cities gleam, undimmed by human tears. America, America, God shed His grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood, from sea to shining sea, and crown thy good with brotherhood, from sea to shining sea.
A time of boundless promise. The winds of change fill the air as hope blossoms boldly on the branch. And NASCAR rumbles into town. Catch the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, the Renai 250, and the Active Pest Control 200 at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Be here March 4th and 5th for the promise of a new season. Sunday tickets start at just $44, and all kids tickets are just $10. Visit amsracetix.com. Spring. A time of boundless promise. The winds of change fill the air as hope blossoms boldly on the branch. And NASCAR rumbles into town. Catch the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, the Renai 250, and the Active Pest Control 200 at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Be here March 4th and 5th for the promise of a new season. Sunday tickets start at just $44, and all kids' tickets are just $10. Visit amsracetix.com.